Today is Tuesday, the 15th of July, and you are listening to the World Socialist website. Democrats, media cheer as Trump escalates Ukraine-Russia war. Patrick Martin, July the 14th, 2025. Donald Trump has effectively reversed his administration's policy on the NATO war against Russia in Ukraine, announcing over the weekend that the Pentagon will resume massive arms shipments totaling up to $10 billion. The deliveries will include Patriot air defense systems and long-range missiles capable of striking Moscow and other major Russian cities. Trump appeared at the White House on Monday alongside NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte, exchanging flattery and pledges of renewed solidarity. Rutte later met with top congressional leaders while German Defense Minister Boris Pistorius held talks with Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth and General Dan Kane, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, to finalize the details of the arms shipments. As is generally the case with Trump, boosting the profits of American corporations at the expense of their overseas rivals was a key selling point for the deal. European countries will purchase billions of dollars in US-made weapons, including two Patriot missile systems, and send them to Ukraine, propping up both the crumbling Zelensky regime in Kiev and the bottom line of military contractors like Raytheon and Lockheed Martin. At Monday's press briefing, Trump announced that he was giving Russian President Vladimir Putin 50 days to reach a ceasefire deal with Ukraine. If not, Trump warned, he would impose tariffs of at least 100% on any country that purchases Russian oil and gas. The tariffs would target China, India and Brazil, which, along with Russia, are founding members of BRICS, the economic bloc set up to promote trade and financial transactions outside the US dollar. Trump's ultimatum thus directly links his trade war policies against foreign rivals of American capitalism, particularly China, with the US-NATO war against Russia, instigated by Trump's predecessor, Democrat Joe Biden, whom he regularly denounces. The response of leading Democrats and their allies in the corporate media was, predictably, to praise the shift. Senator Jeanne Shaheen, the ranking Democrat on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, said, quote, "It would be good news if the president follows through and ensures that he makes good on those statements," end of quote. In an interview with the New York Times, she said, quote, "It's a welcome change in rhetoric," but added, "Whether this lasts very long is not clear." The opposition of the Democrats to Trump, going back to the first administration, has always been centered primarily on issues of foreign policy, particularly what they considered to be an insufficiently aggressive attitude towards Russia. When the Democrats moved to impeach Trump in 2019, it was not for his crimes against the working class, such as the savage persecution of immigrants or the separation of children from their parents, or his open preparations for dictatorship. Instead, the Democratic-controlled House of Representatives impeached Trump for delaying U.S. military aid to Ukraine in order to put pressure on President Zelensky to help Trump in his re-election campaign. Once Biden entered the White House, he quickly set aside the threat of fascist dictatorship, revealed in Trump's instigation of the failed coup attempt of January the 6, 2021. Instead, he called for a, quote, "strong Republican Party" to support his anti-Russian policy, which succeeded in provoking Putin's invasion of February 2022. The Democrats have facilitated and collaborated in the second Trump administration's assault on immigrants, democratic rights and social counter-revolution. They have assured financing of the government and stood by as Trump erects a political dictatorship. Like the Republicans, the Democrats are a party of Wall Street and the military intelligence apparatus, unalterably committed to the defense of the profit system at home and the global interest of American imperialism. At least for the present, Trump, whose main focus has been on China, is shifting behind the demands for aggression against Russia. The bipartisan policy of war against Russia was spelled out most directly in the joint appearance on the CBS Sunday morning interview program Face the Nation by Republican Senator Lindsey Graham and Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal. Graham is a frothing warmonger whatever the target of US imperialism. Blumenthal was his partner at the NATO meeting last week, where they met with Ukrainian President Zelensky. Graham boasted that he and Blumenthal had obtained 85 co-sponsors among 100 members of the Senate on legislation to authorize Trump to, quote, impose 500% tariffs on any country that helps Russia and props up Putin's war machine, end of quote. He gloated, quote, this is truly a sledgehammer available to President Trump to end this war, end of quote, i.e. to bring about the defeat and crushing of Russia. Democrat Blumenthal embraced that term, saying, quote, this has to be a critical moment for these sanctions, and bringing down of this sledgehammer at this moment was emphasized by all the European allies who were at the meeting that Senator Graham and I attended in Europe. They are absolutely in solidarity, end of quote. Blumenthal continued, quote, but what is most important, I think, at this moment is our unity. Senator Graham and I, Republican and Democrat, coming together, the European leaders with diverse groups also in unity. This unity reportedly included a common determination to make use of $300 billion in Russian assets frozen in accounts in Europe to help pay for the war, including the new round of massive arms purchases from the United States. Blumenthal went on to endorse a bipartisan US policy of breaking up Russia's alliances with North Korea, China, and Iran, and referred admiringly to Trump's recent airstrikes against Iran as, quote, the success against Iran's nuclear program, end of quote. Trump's shift on Russia has produced a noticeable change in tone in the Democratic Party-aligned media. The Bezos-owned Washington Post, which has consistently been the most aggressive against Russia, published an editorial Monday endorsing Trump's actions on Ukraine by warning against any turn away from confrontation with Russia. Quote, for the sake of Ukraine specifically and American credibility generally, the Post wrote, Trump cannot back down, end of quote. The editorial called for, quote, more offensive weapons to hit targets behind the front line, end of quote. Criticizing the previous Biden administration for timidity because it was, quote, always fearing that more direct Ukrainian attacks on Russia might ignite a broader regional conflict against a nuclear power. They didn't, end of quote. After this blithe dismissal of the danger of a nuclear holocaust, the Post urged Trump to continue the policy Biden eventually arrived at of supplying long-range ATACMS ballistic missiles, which can hit major Russian cities, including Moscow and St. Petersburg. The Democratic Party's full embrace of Trump's escalation of the war in Ukraine exposes a fundamental political reality. It is not an opposition party. It shares with Trump the essential aims of American imperialism, support for Wall Street and the defense of the capitalist system. There is a massive and growing opposition to Trump's drive towards dictatorship, the militarized assault on immigrants, and the escalating attack on social programs. But this opposition cannot be realized through the Democratic Party, which functions as a tool of the same ruling class. What is required is the development of an independent political movement of the working class, fighting for the abolition of capitalism and the reorganization of society on a socialist basis. This is the program of the Socialist Equality Party. Jaime Alanis Garcia falls 30 feet to his death fleeing ICE agents in California immigrant raid. Mark Wells, July 14, 2025. The death of 57-year-old Jaime Alanis Garcia as a result of an ICE raid in Camarillo, California, marks a turning point in the fascistic assault on immigrants and the entire working class. Garcia, a farm worker, fell 30 feet while fleeing federal agents during a July 10 violent operation at the Glasshouse Farms cannabis facility. Jaime died as a direct consequence of a brutal militarized immigration crackdown spearheaded by the Trump administration and supported by both capitalist parties. He is the first known martyr in what is becoming an American Gestapo campaign, a term not used lightly, with deliberate historical weight. Garcia was also a husband, a father, and the sole provider for his family in Mexico, whose survival depended on the remittances he sent back from his low-paid labor in California. His blood is on many hands. It stains not only Trump and his cabal of fascist advisers and enforcers, but the entire Democratic and Republican establishment, whose policies over decades have criminalized immigration, sanctioned raids, fortified the border, and empowered agencies like ICE with sweeping powers to terrorize communities. Jaime Alanis Garcia died as millions live, in fear of arrest, deportation, or worse, for the crime of being born in the wrong place and seeking to work. His death has resonated with working people across the country. A GoFundMe organized in his name has raised over $160,000 as of Monday, a testament to the love and solidarity he inspired and the depth of grief and outrage his death has provoked. On July 10, ICE launched coordinated raids at two glasshouse farms, cannabis facilities in Camarillo and Carpinteria, storming the sites with federal agents, armored vehicles, and helicopters. Over 300 people, including at least four U.S. citizens, were arrested in the raids. Amid the military-style assault, federal officials proudly announced they had discovered, quote, at least 10 child laborers, end of quote. Rather than indicting the capitalist system that employs children in backbreaking agricultural labor, in 2025 California, the state has moved to criminalize the victims of that exploitation. The, quote, discovery of child workers has now been cynically used to retroactively justify the raid and mass arrests, deflecting attention from the real scandal that in the richest state of the richest country on earth, such 19th century barbarism exists as a matter of course. New heading, the, quote, sanctuary state, lie of the role of the Democrats. On July 11, a video surfaced showing around two dozen children and women in federal custody, hands chained, shuffling single file through a Los Angeles federal building parking garage. The footage, confirmed by attorneys with the Coalition for Humane Immigrant Rights, Los Angeles, CHIRLA, Chila, sparked outrage. Jorge Mario Cabrera of Chila condemned the scene as, quote, barbaric, emphasizing that these were children, not criminals. While the children were later reported, quote, safe by attorneys from Chile's Rapid Response Network, Cabrera emphasized this offered little comfort. The Trump administration's actions were denounced as shameful, and ICE officials have not responded to questions about the detentions. California has long been promoted as a, quote, sanctuary state by Democratic politicians, like Governor Gavin Newsom, who recently signed a state budget that effectively condemns undocumented immigrants to illness and destitution, and Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass. This is a lie. The illusion of California as a safe haven for immigrants is shattered every time ICE conducts a raid with the assistance of local law enforcement. On the contrary, California is being used as the model for a deliberate militarization of society, as evidenced by recent federal military-style operations in MacArthur Park, Los Angeles, codenamed Operation Excalibur. This assault deployed armored vehicles, helicopters, and heavily armed agents, normalizing paramilitary tactics against working-class communities and immigrants. Repeated investigations and whistleblower reports have revealed that California police departments have illegally collaborated with ICE and Border Patrol. Over 100 instances were documented in June alone of Southern California police agencies illegally sharing data from automated license plate readers with federal immigration authorities in flagrant violation of state law. In downtown Los Angeles, LAPD officers were seen assisting federal agents in detaining immigrants, managing protest crowds, and even deleting video evidence of the raids, targeting not only undocumented workers but U.S. citizens attempting to film abuses. New heading, the cowardice and complicity of the trade unions. The United Farm Workers, UFW, which historically claims to represent immigrant labourers, has once again proven itself utterly bankrupt. In a revealing interview, UFW President Teresa Romero admitted that raids had been ongoing, quote, for months, yet the union's response has been limited to calls for non-violence and, quote, peaceful protest, appealing to the very politicians responsible for unleashing ICE. Romero acknowledged that the raids had forced farm workers to stay home out of fear, but emphasized that, quote, they don't make a lot of money, so they know they have to go to work, end of quote. She also highlighted efforts to work with politicians on a, quote, pathway to citizenship for those who have labored for 40 or 50 years, end of quote. This grotesque approach, where security is a reward for decades of poverty, is a damning indictment of the UFW's pro-capitalist orientation. The union's current stance aligns with its long history of anti-immigrant positions. In 1969, the UFW founder, Cesar Chavez, and the union protested undocumented workers as strikebreakers and even reported some to immigration authorities. In the early 1970s, the UFW's, quote, wetline campaign physically attacked migrant workers crossing the border, seeing them as threats to union power. More recently, in 2010, the Take Our Jobs campaign sought to shame native-born workers into farm labour, reinforcing racist stereotypes and evading the real issue, systematic exploitation. The UFW operates not as a defender of immigrant workers, but as an instrument of class collaboration and containment. New heading, the arrest and disappearance of Dr. Jonathan Caravello. The true scope of repression was further exposed by the arrest of Dr. Jonathan A. Caravello, a philosophy and maths lecturer at California State University, Channel Islands. During the Camarillo raid, Caravello reportedly tried to assist a disabled man in a wheelchair after ICE agents fired tear gas, with one canister landing beneath the chair. Suddenly, multiple agents seized Caravello, threw him on the ground, and dragged him into an unmarked vehicle. For days, his whereabouts were unknown, and he reportedly had no access to his medications, prompting outcry from support groups. The California Faculty Association, of which he is a member, has issued a statement condemning the abduction as a, quote, grave attack on our constitutional rights to free speech. It is believed that he was held at the Ventura County Federal Detention Facility on a $1 million bail, yet no formal charges were initially announced. U.S. Attorney Bill Ezzali claimed Caravello had not been, quote, kidnapped, but faced charges under 18 U.S.C. 111 for allegedly assaulting officers by throwing a tear gas canister. This statute is often used to criminalize protesters during political crackdowns. Caravello's disappearance signals the broadening of state repression beyond immigrants to anyone daring to protest or intervene. On Monday, more than 3 days after he was taken, a judge ordered Caravello's release from the Los Angeles Metropolitan Detention Center. The Trump administration's immigration raids are a testing ground for authoritarian rule. Backed by both capitalist parties, the ruling class is preparing for mass unrest driven by deepening inequality, endless war, and social collapse. The attacks on immigrants are the spearhead of this assault, aimed at normalizing paramilitary tactics and conditioning the public to accept unaccountable federal agents operating with impunity. But the ultimate target is not just immigrants, it is the entire working class. This is why US citizens have been arrested, professors disappeared, video evidence deleted, and children exploited or chained. The message from this state is unmistakable. Protest and you are the enemy. No appeal to the Democrats or the unions will stop this. The only way forward is through the international struggle for socialism to unite workers everywhere in the fight to abolish capitalism and build a new socialist society. Nine dead in Fall River, Massachusetts, assisted living facility fire, a sign of systemic neglect in U.S. elder care. Kate Randall, July 14, 2025. 9 elderly residents are dead and more than 30 hospitalised following a devastating fire that ripped through the Gabriel House assisted living facility on Oliver Street in Fall River, Massachusetts on Sunday night, July the 14th. The harrowing accounts from survivors reveal a tragedy long in the making, rooted in economic decline and an elder care industry that prioritises profit over human lives. A thriving textile manufacturing centre until the early 20th century, employing thousands in its mills, the southeastern Massachusetts city of 94,000 now ranks 344 out of the state's 350 municipalities in per capita income. More than 17% of Fall River residents, aged 65 and older, live below the poverty line, and 14.2% of this age group live alone. Firefighters responding to the Gabriel House around 9:30 p.m. on Sunday found heavy fire at the main entrance of the building. The scene was immediately described as tricky and chaotic, with multiple residents seen hanging out of the windows and doorways, screaming and begging for help. More than four dozen firefighters, including 30 who were off duty, joined the rescue effort, entering the smoke-filled building, breaking down doors and physically carrying out approximately a dozen non-ambulatory residents to safety. Five firefighters were treated at a local hospital for smoke inhalation and released. Many residents were in bed or just about to go to sleep when the fire broke out. Many were in wheelchairs, immobile or dependent on oxygen tanks, making self-evacuation nearly impossible. Neil Beck, a 78-year-old resident, told the Boston Globe, he was pulled by firefighters from his third-floor window, fearing he would have to jump. Another resident, Lorraine Ferreira, 71, said that she was blown back by smoke when she opened her door and had to yell for help from her second-floor window until a firefighter broke in to rescue her. Michael Pimentel, 72, who has two prosthetic legs, described to the Globe breaking his own window after struggling to get out of his smoke-filled room, witnessing flames 10 feet tall. New heading, ignored warnings at Gabriel House. According to some residents, the Fall River fire was a disaster waiting to happen. Michael Pimentel and his friend Russell Sylvia stated that they had called news stations multiple times urging investigations into the Gabriel House. They told the Globe the facility, quote, smelled like urine and had mice in beds and cockroaches, end of quote. Most damningly, Pimentel stated the elevator at the facility was broken for 8.5 months and had just recently been fixed a couple of weeks before the fire, only to break again a few days prior to the tragedy. Aside from the obvious safety risk, this is particularly alarming given that many residents were in wheelchairs and unable to go outside for prolonged periods due to the broken elevator. Fall River Mayor Paul Coogan acknowledged reports of a broken elevator, but stated the elevator was last inspected on July the 8th, 2025. Pimentel reported that during the inferno, lights and exit signs were not illuminated when the fire alarm sounded. These allegations, if proven true, point to egregious safety failures. The fact that the owner of Gabriel House, Dennis D. Ertzkorn, was previously indicted for paying kickbacks to improperly procure over $2 million from MassHealth, the state's form of Medicaid, raises further questions about the facility's operational integrity and focus on profit over resident well-being. The charges against Ertzkorn were only dropped due to financial records having been illegally obtained. The Gabriel House tragedy brings into sharp focus the alarming lack of regulation and oversight in Massachusetts' assisted living industry. Unlike at nursing homes, which have specialized, though often ignored, regulations, owners of assisted living facilities are regulated more like landlords. John Ford, director of the Elder Law Project at the Northeast Justice Center, has described assisted living residents in Massachusetts as, quote, kind of the Wild West, with few standards and little protections for residents. A class action lawsuit was filed in October 2024 against Halkeen Management, which operates 7 assisted living homes in Massachusetts, for allegedly charging low-income residents illegal, quote, ancillary fees that left them with little or no money. These fees were reportedly charged even though MassHealth programs already funded essential services, amounting to double billing. The lawsuit exemplifies the systemic exploitation of vulnerable seniors in a weakly regulated industry. The Attorney General claims that designing regulations to protect seniors at assisted living facilities is a, quote, cornerstone of her office. But this comes after years of recognised issues at the homes. A state investigation in 2024 found, quote, systemic failures leading to, quote, serious harm and in some cases death of residents, end of quote, in as many as 7 elder care facilities across Massachusetts, resulting in fines and closures. Elder care and prohibitive costs across the US. The senior living crisis extends beyond Massachusetts. Elder abuse and neglect in US nursing homes and elder care facilities are not only alarming and prevailing problems, but also often go unreported. Statistics suggest that up to 2 million American senior citizens aged 65 or older might have been affected by elder abuse, and one report found that as many as 1 in 3 elder care institutions were responsible for instances of neglect and abuse. The cost of assisted living in the US is astronomical, further highlighting the economic pressures placed on seniors and their families. As of 2025, the estimated median cost of assisted living in the US is $6,077 per month, or $72,924 per year, according to seniorliving.org. In Massachusetts, the median monthly cost is even higher, standing at around $9,330. These costs are prohibitive for all but the wealthiest seniors who can afford country club-style accommodation in their, quote, golden years. Original Medicare does not cover room and board or assistance with daily living tasks in assisted living facilities. Medicaid coverage varies by state and generally prohibits using funds for room and board. This leaves most families to pay out of pocket, often by draining retirement accounts, savings, or selling their home. The alternative for many seniors is to remain with relatives who are ill-equipped to provide or pay for care. With the growing number of older adults in the US expected to reach 83.7 million by 2050, the demand for assisted living is outpacing available beds, exacerbating the crisis. The median annual cost for assisted living in the US, ranging from $70,800 to $72,924, dwarfs that of other developed nations. For example, assisted living costs in Canada are $24,000 to $60,000 per year, with provincial subsidies available, while in Japan costs are $18,000 to $42,000 per year, with national long-term care insurance available. Austerity measures implemented by governments globally will inevitably raise costs in these countries as well. The Gabriel House fire is not an isolated incident, but a tragic consequence of a society and healthcare system that has long failed to provide adequate protections and support for its most vulnerable citizens, especially the elderly. For these articles and more, go to the World Socialist website, wsws.org. For the World Socialist website, this has been Carol Diviak.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.